And if you want to be a part of the conversation too, then subscribe to my Patreon, www.patreon.com/MrChaz, and join the conversation. Ask your own question. Be a part of it for as low as $5 a month and get access to one-on-one coaching with me for as low as $20 a month.
These practices will help both the educator and the students experience greater mental well-being, because the nervous system is the thing in the body that is responsible for our mental states. So it's something that can be used in a preventative kind of way to help with things like anxiety and depression, suicidality, things like that. I mean, this is, again, a newer kind of perspective in the mental health world, that the nervous system is the primary driver for mental health states. But nonetheless, that's well established now. And that's what the framework is bringing, is sort of a way in which to address mental health from a preventative framework or from a early intervention, stance.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your leadership, parenting, or teaching journey. And today, I have Emily here from the Regulated Classroom. And instead of me talking about her, I'm going to have her introduce herself per usual. And we'll get right started with the conversation. Go ahead, Emily.
Sure. So first off, I feel like I have to say, Chaz, for your listeners, or anybody might see this, I'm in New Hampshire. We just had 40 inches of snow. And so I've had no power for 2 days, not showered in 2 days. So hence the way that I appear. But actually, thank you, Chaz, for inviting me to be with you today and to talk a little bit about the work that I do with the Regulated Classroom. Super excited about that. And I feel like in the things that I understand about you and what I've seen of you, there's a lot of that you do already very naturally. But I myself am a former school counselor of 21 years. But left working as a school counselor, actually a student assistance counselor, in 2017 to start my own trauma-informed schools consultancy. And it was from there that I developed the framework, the Regulated Classroom.
Okay. So tell us more about that framework and like the idea behind it. Why did you feel like you needed to create your own thing? Was there not anything else that you had access to or could use that you felt met the needs that you were trying to meet? Tell us about that.
Yeah. So when I was working as a student assistance counselor, I was working with a lot of students that were considered challenging, behaviorally speaking. And what it was is that a lot of them had significant trauma in their history. And so in 2016, I went to Bessel van der Kolk's conference in Boston. It was there that I was first exposed to the science of ACEs and the science of trauma, stress, and resilience. And bam, it was like a huge light bulb moment for me, because I had always been somebody who was trying to be more effective when working with students and always searching for like the program or the thing that was going to make a difference for them. And there were certain things that I did with students that I did feel like were really helpful and transformative in some ways, but I didn't understand why that was until the beginning of that trauma-informed journey for me. So the answer is yes. When I went looking for a framework, there just wasn't one that I felt like was rooted in the science that we now have, and couple that with my experiences of what was effective. A lot of things, a lot of programs, whether that's social emotional learning programs or whatnot, are really very relationally oriented, which is great, but we know that regulation underlies the ability to be relational. So that was the piece that I was really looking for.
Okay, so you went to this conference, and your life was changed. You kind of went on this journey. It was like, okay, like, where is this stuff? And you didn't really find anything. So then you decided to make your own thing? Like, what was that kind of thought process? What was that?
So that's a great question. So what happened was, from that conference, because one of the first people I saw speak at that conference was a gentleman by the name of Dr. Peter Levine, who developed somatic experiencing, which is a modality to treat complex trauma. And when I went from that conference into his training, because I was like, I got to get trained in this. And when I was attending those training sessions, I was thinking to myself, this is so applicable for educators. Like, why don't we have something like this in education? At the time when I was looking for things, the people whose work was really, really informing the trauma-informed schools model was, or trauma-informed schools movement was, people like Heather Forbes and her book, you know, Help for Billy, and Sandra Bloom and her sanctuary model, Jim Sporleader and, you know, the work of Paper Tigers and the work he was doing there in Walla Walla. But none of those were really like a tight framework. They were all sort of like pieces and sort of theoretical or mindset kind of pieces, but none that were like, do this and then you'll have, you know, you'll have what you are looking for type of thing. And none of those things were also exclusively focused on physiological regulation, like regulating the nervous system. So yeah, I was really desperate for something like that for education, because it existed in the clinical world, but teachers aren't therapists, nor do they want to be. And so I felt like it was my mission to try and develop a framework that carried the clinical benefits of therapeutic intervention without it being therapy. So
okay. That's
where the classroom came from. Yeah.
All right. So I got to know. So what is that framework? Tell us more about what that framework actually is. Mm-hmm. What does it look like? How do you implement it? Break it down for us.
Yes, totally. 100%. I'm ready. I'm ready. So, okay. There's four core practices. And the four core practices are sort of like categories of experiences that we know help us as human beings regulate and connect, relate and learn, right? So the first category of practices are called connectors. And connectors are practices that are rooted in the benefits, the scientifically validated benefits of play and building relationships. And they also, a lot of them also are about how to create a psychological container for safety within the classroom. So they're very relational practices, right? And some of these things I learned when I was much younger and worked in camp settings and did Project Adventure and did things like that. And so my work borrows from a lot of other people's work. So connectors, that's the first core practice. The second core practice are activators. And these practices are collective rhythm-making practices that have a somatosensory component to them. So what does that mean? These are ways in which for us to move our bodies in rhythmic collective ways to help synchronize the collective nervous system in the classroom. So if you think about it, like, we are okay at doing stuff like that at the elementary level, but we definitely don't do it at the middle school and high school levels. And we really need rhythm as a form of regulation throughout our lifespan. And so I'm really teaching educators how to do that. The third core practice are settlers. And this is rooted in all of the vast research that exists around mindfulness and meditation and stillness practices that help us to, like, basically rewire the brain. So these practices are all ways in which we can collectively settle ourselves. And they're not all mindfulness, because mindfulness is actually really tough for certain people who have sensitive nervous systems. And then last but not least are affirmations. And affirmations are in contrast to, like, rewards that we see in a PBIS model or a behavioral model. Affirmations are practices of embodied gratitude, and they're rooted in the science of positive psychology. So once we get, like, in a regulated place, get real relational with one another, then we can affirm our experiences with one another and therefore make more positive associations in our body memory. So that's it. Those are the four core practices. Connectors, activators, settlers, affirmations. And that's the framework.
Right. And so the connectors are more just, it's that relational connection.
And play stuff, you know. And I mean, you probably had this experience in the classroom, Chaz, where you tried to do something playful. And this might even be like when you're more sort of trying to establish rapport with kids, but, or maybe even just on any given day, and you're like doing something playful with them. And then all of a sudden, like a fight breaks out, or kids start arguing with one another, right? So like not all play ends up being playful, because play is a mobilized state. And we have to like have a lot of cues of safety there to help that mobilized state stay in a good place. But for some of us, like if a kid makes, let's say we're playing and a child maybe makes a grimacing face or like changes their tone of voice or does something that others perceive as kind of mean, then it can quickly shift because we're already pretty mobilized. So play is great, but play also can be tricky at times. So I say to folks a lot of times, if you're interested in using the framework, really you want to start with the activators, because those are your best bang for your buck in terms of likelihood that it's going to go well. And you're going to get that experience of like, dude, we're doing something together here. This is great. Like I can feel that we're together. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So the activators kind of, you said it kind of synchronizes the nervous system in the classroom. So everyone's kind of like on the same page and kind of just feeling the energy in the room kind of. And then once, you know, and tell me if I'm wrong, once we kind of have a synchronized nervous system in the classroom, we're all kind of on the same page, then something like connectors will be more likely to be helpful and effective. Am I right there?
Yes, you're catching my vibe 100%. So we really want to, like, it's that Bruce Perry sequence of engagement, right? We want to regulate first, then we can relate, and then we can reason, which means we can learn. So you're absolutely right. So it's like we want to really hone in initially with the activators and the settlers, because those are about the nervous system and both our individual nervous systems as educators and also about the nervous system of our students, because like there's that, we've got two dynamics alive there. We've got our own individual experiences happening from moment to moment, but then we're also deeply affected by our students and how they are collectively together too, right? So like if the kids just don't feel like they're not focused, they're not attending, they're not engaged, that has like an activating effect on our own nervous system, right? So anyway, so that's partly what the activators and settlers are about. It's about really trying to get into this cohesive, synchronized place, which I feel like I've even seen videos of you being that way with students and experiencing that with students. But isn't that the best feeling ever when you're like, dude, we are so together right now?
We're all vibing together and just feeling good and things are going.
You're like, I got these kids, man. I got them. And really beautiful learning happens in that kind of space. It's not something you can like sustain in forever, right? It's a moment in time, but it's a really beautiful place to start from. Instead of trying to get our kids to just comply and follow the rules, we really want them with us, right? And it's our nervous systems. That's one way to help. My framework is really, not only is it oriented to trying to help students, but it's really about starting with the educator's experience initially, right? And really acknowledging the amount of stress and burnout that people experience in this work, because it's stressful.
So it sounds like part of the idea too is that even within the kind of the stressful environment that a lot of people exist in, especially being in education, that things like activators and connectors and affirmations and the settlers, those things are as much for us as the adult to kind of change our nervous system as it is for the children.
You're 100% right. I love it so much. I love that you're like, you're so with me right now. Yeah. So that's exactly right. It's like deciding that we're going to start, instead of thinking about the starting place for improving anything is with the kids. It's instead saying, nope, I think actually the starting place for that work is with us, the adults. That's what somatic experience gave to me. It gave me the awareness of like, oh, I'm bringing in my own nervous system into the classroom experience or into a session experience with a student. And that has a profound effect on them. And like, once I started seeing things through that lens, it started to make a lot more sense to me about why it was that I reacted to certain students in certain ways and not to others in other ways. And also just that, like, that could happen for students with me as well. Right. So, yeah. And it exactly what you're describing, which is that when we engage with students in this way, we are transforming the experience together. So a lot of people will say to me, well, these things sound nice, but like the system's broken. What are we supposed to do about the multitude of stressors that exist that are, you know, basically injustices? And I would validate that and say, you're 100% correct. The systems are disgustingly broken in so many ways. However, as human beings, we can withstand war. We can withstand natural disasters. We can withstand horrific experiences if the quality, not only just withstand them, we can actually build resilience through them. If the quality of the experiences we're having with the people around us are such that we feel safe and we feel held and we feel like we're a part of something. We feel like we belong. So that's really what I'm trying to offer to educators is like, as bad as it is, and there are things for sure that need to change. There's no question about that. But that doesn't mean that we can't actively be working in our own classrooms or in our own offices with students to make the experiences different right now.
I want to dive deeper into this, especially this kind of this adult first approach, because, you know, you're kind of saying that, you know, our nervous system matters and it's going to impact the nervous system of the children and how things go, whether things go well or don't. And not only do we have our own kind of stuff that we got to hurdle over, each individual child has got their own stuff, and there might be a reason why they are responding or reacting to you in certain ways. And on top of that, there we exist in this broken, you know, system of things. And I mean, even I would say that, like, you know, we're talking about education, but I think a lot of things that involve children at all are just broken or dated and just not working. I think parents would agree too. And especially, you know, when you talk about like the importance of community, what if, like, okay, I recognize the power that I have, I'm there, or I recognize the power and the impact that I have in my classroom, in my environment, in my household, but I just don't feel like doing an activator. I'm just not like I don't want to do the rhythm. Like, I'm PO'd or I'm just not feeling it. I'm just having an off day. Mm-hmm. I literally just don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about how we hold the nervous systems of all these children when we really just don't, like, just not feeling it that day or that moment, that week? Yeah. What are your thoughts? What's your advice?
Oh, yeah. So, God, you have such great questions. I just have to say, like, I'm so grateful that you're vibing.
Because I'm in it.
You're so in it. I'm so, like, thank you so much for your level of thoughtfulness. So yes and yes. So here's what I mean is that, so in addition to the four core practices, there's two essential educator capacities that I'm looking to help educators refine. And the first one is known as tracking state. So it's exactly what you just described, Chaz. It's actually just being alive in what you're experiencing in a moment, because so many of us are really kind of dulled down as a result of having to live through what we've lived through in education. And I think about that even pre-pandemic. I mean, it was a rough profession pre-pandemic, and the pandemic only worsened that. So a lot of my work, not only does it start from the place of the educator, but it actually starts with, let's just acknowledge in our nervous systems how we're holding the residue of essentially collective trauma in a profession, and how that weighs us down and makes us feel so stuck, or makes us feel so disengaged. You know what I mean? Like, it's not even so much that we are mobilized and rageful. Some of us are just actually pretty absent from feeling anything, because we can go through the motions day to day and get the job done. But that's a very different experience than actually like showing up and being alive in our experience, right? Yeah. So what I say to educators is like, if you're having that experience of like, A, I don't want to do this, or B, I'm experiencing like high level of agitation or irritation from you even suggesting I do this, I'm like, I just want you to notice that. I just want you to honor that. Just be with that. Because that's the amazing thing about this work and what we understand from the clinical world is that a lot of times when we just actually honor where we're at, it shifts. Mm-hmm. And so that's a starting point a lot of times, is like bringing in some self-compassion, as Dr. Mona Del Hook talks about it. But it's really just like, instead of us feeling like we have to force something, it's like, no, let's just, and even maybe owning that with our kids, like, hey, kids, once they get this language and stuff, I feel it in my body, like, you know, Mrs. Daniels is defense mobilized today. Like, and if you feel me in that way, you feel like I'm not how I normally am, I'm not my warm, loving self, you're right, because I'm feeling this sense of agitation in my nervous system. Like, that's the kind of language that I'm trying to provide for educators, so they can own it for themselves and they can own it with their kids. And in many ways, it sort of deflates shame, right? And deflates feelings of failure. Because yeah. It's not that you're lazy. It's not that you're a jerk. It's not that you don't care. It's that your body hasn't yet recovered and healed from what you've been carrying. And so that's a lot of where when I work with educators, I'm always saying to people, you want to engage in professional development with me. It's not just about the framework. I want to hold space for you to recognize where you've been and how this has impacted you. You know, like, and that doesn't, you know, and we're talking about it right here. I'm not even including the experiences that people have personally coming into the work, coming into the profession. But many of us want to do the work we do because there was someone in our lives that was transformative, right? And I mean, this is especially true in the field of mental health, but a lot of us have pretty high ACE scores, myself included. But that's the kind of thing where there was somebody who was, or there were people that weren't, and you want to be that, right? Yeah. So there's a lot of heart and passion for people who come into this work, and it's usually from a pretty wounded place. Yeah. And so I'm taking all those things and like holding space for it and being like, yeah, and thank you for like doing the work you're doing, because it really matters and you make a difference, you know? So I love that question. Great question, Chaz. So great. Thank you.
So you said, I think you mentioned two teacher capacities, and it sounds like one is being aware of kind of your state and aware of what you're feeling and being really kind of just be mindful and conscious of what's going on.
How is your nervous system functioning from moment to moment, bringing much self-awareness to that? Because it actually changes the narrative you tell yourself, the meaning you make about experiences when you can actually track your stress state. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is what's known as recruiting the realm of social engagement. And that's actually a capacity. And so notice that these two things I don't call skills, that I'm not looking to develop skills in educators. I'm looking to refine internal biological capacities that they already possess, because that's why they can do this work. But many of us have seen those capacities be diminished. And these are biological capacities, by the way, but they've been diminished by too much stress and too much overwhelm and not enough opportunity to heal and recover. So to recruit the realm of social engagement is the work of Dr. Stephen Porges and polyvagal theory. And what I mean by that is that I'm helping them, when they're regulated, imbue their relationships and the environment with cues of safety, to help those kids come into that place of safety with them. So it's like, you got to get regulated first before you really can do that recruiting of the social engagement system with students and with colleagues, but it is possible. So yeah, those are the two educator capacities that I'm looking to refine
Can you give us an example of what an activator might sound like, or... Mm-hmm. Because it involves rhythm. I mean, maybe we can do a little.
You want to do one right now?
Yeah. I would love to hear One.
Okay, will... yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. It's like I'm in a training. Ready? I'm like, yeah. Look at me. I'm like a total mess. I hope that people are like, okay with that. Like, it's so funny. I was screaming at Emma before I got on the Zoom. I'm like, Emma, I can't go like this. Look at me. I have been in a storm. Like, she's like, it's fine. Who cares? Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So what it looks like. So a couple things to think about. Number one is that what is rhythm and why does it matter so much? So rhythm is anything that comes to us let me restate that. Rhythm is either a sound, a movement, or a something visual that has a pattern to it, a predictable pattern to it. And if you think about that, when you think about it in that way, it makes a lot of sense why we're so drawn to rhythm, and also why rhythm is so healing during a period of lacking predictability, right? Because it's like our bodies really orient to things that are like coming, because we want to know what's coming. That's a huge piece of like, that's a huge part of the human experience. So even if you started like this, for example, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We're gonna do the right leg. 2, 3, 4, 5.
We're shaking it.
7, 8. Left leg. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then you have that. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Half it again. 1, 2, 1, 2. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. And then just kind of take inventory of like, do I notice anything feeling a little different? Like for me, I sort of feel like my belly kind of shifted in that. My lungs shifted a little bit, like the space in my chest. I actually feel like I can release my belly a little bit more than I was before. And shaking things off is a really great way to discharge excess defense mobilization in the body. So when we get charged up and protective, which is what happens when we get stressed, shaking it off is a great way to help the body reorganize that energetic residue. And just not only to discharge it, but then also to leave the body in a more organized state. And so that's a practice that usually we start with 16 and we go 16 to 8 and then 8 to 4 and then 4 to 2 and then 2 to 1. And with a lot of the practices, especially the activators, they're the kinds of things that the more you do them with your students, like these aren't the kinds of things I want you doing once a week in an SEL lesson. These are things I want you doing both prophylactically, like so adding them to the plan of your day or the plan of your class, but then also using them when you need them. So like just noticing like, hey guys, feeling like we need to kind of get up and move here. I can just feel that in my body that we need to get together with one another. Join me in doing this. So there's clapping sequences, there's dance sequences, there's shaking sequences, there's Qigong, there's yoga, there's a lot of different ways in which to make collective rhythm. And my favorite personally is to pair it with music. And then you can always go to that song and put it on and the whole class just bursts out doing that thing. And you could do that multiple times a day and you would always know, hey, this is our like place that we return to together, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like a really good way to kind of just reset just to reset. And I would imagine one of those times when it would be really helpful to do it is when you're noticing in your body that your nervous system is a little off. Like we were talking how important it is for the adults to have their nervous system together. I think, a lot of times we just, in this space, we'll talk about like, okay, what the kids need. But I also think it's equally important for us to think about like what we need in a certain moment and a time, what we need to reset and being very intentional and conscious and aware about what we're doing for ourselves, to care for ourselves. Because I always say that, like, it's going to be hard to care for anyone else if we aren't caring for ourselves. And so that is something that I would see, you know, not only just doing the activity, but also picking like activators that you really like. Now you personally like, oh, this is my jam. Like, I love to shake it up to, and then maybe play like one of your favorite, like, maybe you're really into like Lauryn Hill or something like that.
Right. Or Shakira, Shake It Baby.
Right.
Exactly.
I think that's really important. And I think also too, the good thing about that is that I asked you the question about like, what if you're not feeling it and you just don't want to do it? Like if the song that you happen to be using is a song that like lifts you up and then it's just a personal for you, then it's going to feel better for you to do. It's going to be more incentive for you to do it. And it's going to be easier to just embed into what you do because it's a part of what you like and what you want to do anyways.
Exactly. And exactly what you're saying is what I encourage educators to do explicitly. I'm like, start with you, start with your sensory preferences, start with your preferred music, start with your preferred movement. Why? Because that's safety, right? So what we know is what feels safe to us. And that is a really important place to start with this work because there are going to be a lot of practices that you're not familiar with, or maybe that don't initially feel good for you. And you're not, if you start with those, the kids feel that they're like, teacher looks kind of like, you know, reluctant or uncertain. And when we aren't showing up in our confident way or trying something with confidence and joy, it's really hard for the kids to catch that, you know?
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. I always say, start with your preferences. I mean, music is so powerful, right? I don't think you got to start my session with me on Chaz in Houston, but I started with We Will Rock You. And that was that song, you know, We Will, you know, Queen, I can't sing, but Will anyways. Song has been played at so many sporting events through the years that it kind of exists in mass consciousness as a song of like pump you up. And so when you come into a space where there's lethargy or people are just kind of losing attention, it's great to play a song that, you know, for most people is associated in their body memory with getting roused up and doing it together. Like we're like, we will, you know, it's that kind of a thing. So, I also want to make mention that part of what I do as well is, so I provide the framework, I provide professional development in that. And then we also do toolkits, sensory toolkits for both staff and students. Cause I'm also recognizing, or I did recognize both when I was a school counselor and a student assistance counselor, and now that some of us are so sensitized in our nervous systems that we actually need support. Like, you know, we always think of the kids as being like, well, is that a sensory kid or is that a trauma kid? I mean, that's kind of how we talk about the students who struggle.
Yeah.
But the reality of it is like, are we those sensory adults? Are we those trauma adults? And it's like, yes, we are. Not to mention that, like, in some ways, we're all the sensory adult. We're all the sensory people and we're all the trauma people. Like, it's not a this, that. I mean, yes, there are people who've had different kinds of experiences, but we all have our lived experiences. They all have shaped who we are. And some of us do need a little bit of something to help our bodies feel more comfortable, feel more settled, feel more energized, conversely. So I do also do sensory toolkits for teachers and for students, because I recognize like some people need help more than just with practices.
Yeah. And okay. So let me dive and ask about that. How do you recommend that a teacher or a parent uses these sensory tools or any sensory tools? Or we can talk about the ones that are, I know the ones that I sent, I think I saw one that were different. I saw you make a kit that was different than the one that I had. Mine was like, kind of like the stretchy.
I literally keep that right here on my desk because that's my absolute most favorite sensory tool. Well, I shouldn't say that because my weighted products are my most favorite, but that one is one that I go to often because I collect so much stress in my shoulders and in my like upper thoracic area. Most people do, which is why a lot of the tools are oriented to that part of the body. But so great question, like what to do with sensory tools. So the coolest thing about sensory tools is that they are So I've done some training with occupational therapists. Like, I wish I had ended up picking that as my career, because I'm so clearly an OT.
Yeah.
That's who I am. And I just didn't know it until much later in life. But anyways, so I've gone to some trainings with folks like that. And what I love when they say is, because I was like waiting, like, okay, when do you use what tool? Like, I want to know, like, da, 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 da. And the tools do have certain intended benefits, and you would use them in certain types of ways. But basically what they say to their training educators or their training OTs is, go around the room and try things out and see what you like. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I love this so much. Like learning through exploration. Well, isn't that genius? We all know that that actually works. So some of the tools that I've selected for like the educator toolkit, it's basically both anecdotal feedback and then also some science that supports the use of some of these tools. So there's eight specific tools in there that are really targeting different parts of the human body that accumulate stress. And then also my understanding of what will help the body to release some of that. But with that said, I can't know if you're going to love the weighted scarf, or you're going to love the essential oil, or you're going to love the massage roller ball, like what's going to work for your body in particular. So variety is also important. So there's eight items in the educator self-care toolkit. And now there are 68 items in the classroom co-regulation toolkit. So that kit is much bigger because it contains all the materials that folks need to do all the practices that are in the guidebook. And then it also gives a wide array of sensory tools for students to use and try that maybe you would put like in your calm corner, but you don't even need to put it in your calm corner, because we should have actually greater access to these kinds of tools in the classroom than just in a corner somewhere. We really want to try to, what I'm trying to do is try to normalize the use of these things and have them be discreet, so no one feels stigmatized by using them. And it's not that sensory kid who needs the tools or that sensory adult that needs the tool. It's just, we are all sensory beings and we benefit from some sensory inputs.
Yeah. What I find is that, I mean, in my experience, it's mostly kids are like, oh, that's cool. That like, they love sensory stuff and they're like, they gravitate towards it and they want it and they want to use it. So it's not like, it might be
hard to get them to want to use it. Yeah. It's not hard to get them to want to use it. Sometimes for us, we're like, whoa, what are you going to do with that? How are you going to do this? Because teachers are always like, why would you put this in the toolkit? Because this is all my kids want to do. And I'm like, well, that's pretty satisfying if you think about it. That's actually really does feel really good. But you can also teach them other ways in which to use it, you know? Yeah. So.
Yeah. Have you had now, and it's great to hear, because I guess I got the teacher toolkit and it's got like, I'd probably say like, maybe like 7 or 8 pieces in there. And there are many more kids that like to use it. So it's great to hear. I wish I had 64. So it'd be easier.
Well, I know, because I think when we sent you yours, it was still one kit. And what I learned, because my work has been evolving ever since I developed the framework. And developed this first sensory toolkit, I ended up taking that initial educator self-care toolkit and splitting it into 2 products, one just for the educator and then one for the classroom. Because awesome. For 2 reasons. One, I found that people were like a little confused. They're like, wait, are these tools for the kids or not for the kids? Or da, da, da. And I was like, well, yeah, you're supposed to model for them how to use it. And then they can use it if you want them to. But people want it to be really clear. So now I've made it really clear. This one's for you guys. And this one's for you to share in the classroom with students. And also people were asking for like, well, how am I going to do the parachute practice if I don't have a parachute and stuff like that? People needing supplies or needing materials. So now there's plenty for everybody to keep everybody happy.
Can you give me an example of, we talked about activators, you gave us a great example. What about connectors? What would be a good connector
exercise or practice? So one that's really fun to use, that's just quick and gets everybody kind of going, is you ask people to put up their right, and this you obviously would have to do with others around you, but you ask them to put up their right thumb, and then they take their left hand and they put that out. And then if they put it, they would put their left hand over the other person's right thumb. And so I would have a hand over mine, And some of you would have, you know, and then on the count of three, one, two, three, you're both trying not to have your thumb get caught and you're trying to grab the other person's thumb. So you usually do this, like you have kids circle up, you know, either in small groups or one large group. But it's silly. And at first people are like, ah, and then they really get into it and they're like concentrating and they're listening and they're like, ah. And so you have them, that's just sort of like a playful, I mean, there's a gazillion things you can do. Yeah. Sending an impulse. Like the other thing too is working with kids around, working with adults and students around renorming things that formerly were norms, but got kind of messed up with COVID. So touching isn't one thing, for example, like how to do touch in the classroom that feels, that is appropriate and also is, induces a feeling of safety. So I have students circle up and they hold hands and then they pass an impulse, like they squeeze hands and pass it around the circle. And what you say to them is, okay, guys, we just did that. How many seconds do you think it took us to send that one pulse around the circle? All right, what do you think we could do? If we tried really hard and focused, how fast do you think we could send that impulse? So it's kind of like, you know, group problem solving and just being playful about things. And there's a million of them, even just having a simple toss. Like I have a koosh ball that's in the co-regulation toolkit. And the thing that I love so much about that particular item is that for the most part, even if somebody gets hit in the face with a koosh ball, they're not going to get bruised or something, and it's not going to really hurt. And so being able to ask a question to the class and say, okay, I'm going to toss the ball. The person who catches it, they're the person who's going to blurt out the answer. Or if you want the ball, you call the ball and it's your turn to ask the question. You know what I mean? So it's a way to integrate playfulness and movement into classroom experiences to make things more, to allow things to be, have a little more levity, to be a little bit more relational and just fun. The single biggest complaint that kids have about school is that they're bored. Bored stiff. And so bringing in just these little things that are micro practices, all the practices in the guidebook are intended to be 1 to 3 minutes. They're all just quick and, you know, just, you're just kind of, yeah, you're just getting them in there so that you can reset yourself and reset it with the kids. And, you know.
All right. So, and, you know, I probably should ask this in the beginning, but, and maybe you've already answered it, but I'm going to ask very directly, like, what is the point of all this? Like, why? I'm just trying to teach my kid math. I'm just trying to, you know, get them to line up, follow my expectations, walk down the, like, what is, why would I need this regulated classroom?
Yeah, great question. So I'll say two things. Number one, we've got two, we essentially have two sort of growing crises that are on our doorstep that we cannot deny. One is the mental health crisis that our children are experiencing. And we know that, you know, the pandemic disrupted the social and emotional development of millions of kids, right? It just developed, it screwed up their development so bad because it removed a social milieu and a social landscape for their lives for a prolonged period of time, at the very least, right? So these practices will help both the educator and the students experience greater mental well-being because the nervous system is the thing in the body that is responsible for our mental states. So it's something that is can be used in a preventative kind of way to help with things like anxiety and depression, suicidality, things like that. I mean, this is, again, a newer kind of perspective in the mental health world that the nervous system is the primary driver for mental health states. But nonetheless, that's well established now. And that's what the framework is bringing is sort of a way in which to address mental health from a preventative framework or from a early intervention, you know, stance. The second thing is that we also have the worst crisis we've ever seen in educator, both resignation and just we have huge issues with educator burnout, but we have people that are resigning earlier than they have in the profession at greater numbers and less people entering the profession. So we have an educator workforce shortage that's massive, and it's kind of in a snowball effect right now, and it needs to be interrupted in order for us to keep a number of high quality people in our schools. So you have both those things happening simultaneously. And the regulated classroom, if done with frequency, as it's intended to be, will help to change the educator's experience of their work and of their students. And it will help our students to feel safer and more secure, which will help with mental health issues and violence prevention. And I know that that sounds like I'm promising a lot, but I really am. Each of those practices are rooted in a huge base of science. And it's like, when you look at all the different science, because I'm that nerd who has, and it also was my job for a very long time. But when you look at all the different science around, like, well, how do you prevent gun violence in schools? How do you prevent student aggression? How do you address suicidality? Da-da-da. How do you deal with anxiety? When you look at all those things underlying, what you see is, oh, a lot of those behaviors, a lot of those mental health states stem from a dysregulated nervous system and from a sustained dysregulated nervous system. So if you address the regulation issue, voila, you help to make a safer, healthier world. So.
All right. We're running out of time, but I want to ask about the affirmations. What are the affirmations? We didn't really talk much about that. Can you just tell me more about that? And maybe give us.
No, I love that. I love that. Thank you so much for asking. Your question's been so good, Jazz. So the affirmations are really, I added them or included them in the framework because I felt like I was somebody whose career started with positive behavior intervention and supports, or PBIS. And I developed it, I chaired it in my first school in Wilmington, Delaware, back in 2001. And I remember being a part of that process and being like, wow, we're really kind of defining these behavioral expectations for students. And then we're just rewarding them if they do what we want them to do. And I mean, just to be kind of plain about it.
Yeah.
And what I found with that particular kind of way about approaching behavior was that initially it appealed to me because it was oriented toward the positive and not discipline or harsh punishment. However, it ended up just reinforcing kids who already were acting appropriately. And for my students, because I always was more oriented to working with kids who were challenged behaviorally and academically, I found like it just kind of made them feel more and more discouraged. And now looking back on it, from a trauma-informed lens, I'm like, well, no wonder why those kids felt so discouraged by that, because they couldn't meet the behavioral expectation. They would get triggered into stress reactions that then they would lose their verbal filter. They'd say things they shouldn't, they'd do things they shouldn't, that kind of thing. So I felt like it wasn't very effective, and it ended up making the kids who were already struggling feel worse about themselves to begin with. So when I developed it, the framework, I wanted to include affirmations for two reasons. One, to kind of bring a counterbalance to praise, and not that praise doesn't have its place and not that reward doesn't have its place, but I wanted it to be a way for us to hold space for positive experiences that we have with each other that are authentic and genuine. Mm. Like, you know, that moment when you're really feeling good with a student and they're feeling it with you, or you're feeling that way with the class, or they're feeling it with one another. And I was like, I want us to have like ways in which we hold space for this and really take it into our bodies and connect it to our somatic experience or what's happening to our nervous system in the moment. And I also knew that, and this is a, you know, age old phrase at this point, but what fires together wires together. So if you hold space for positive experiences in school in a very deliberate way, you're helping you and the students make more meaningful associations with positivity in the school environment. It's like, that's what we need. We need to, our bodies need to feel like when we're in this place, this is a place of community. This is a place of belonging. This is where I am seen and I am heard, like both as the adults, and as the kids, right? So I just wanted it to be like, yeah, I wanted it to be that, to be, you know, something that was really deliberately positive.
Give us an example.
Okay. So for example, in the first, like, I think the very first practice of affirmations, there's a bunch of prompts that help people to give, that help to give the students and the staff language. Like, when I saw you singing today, it made my chest leap with joy. So there's connecting something that you're seeing with something you felt on the inside. So, you know, asking kids to do that sort of thing, or modeling that with students when we notice things in the moment, like when we're feeling regulated, holding space and saying, hey guys, I am feeling so like fizzy and excited in my body and just like percolating on the inside because we're all working on this together right now. And you have such great ideas, you know? So really connecting the somatic experience, the body experience, with the positive moment in time. And the other piece of it too is that there's so much emphasis, or what has been so much emphasis, on positive psychology, which is this idea that you can kind of think your way into feeling better. And that is true if you're regulated. So there are pieces of positive psychology that I think need to be acknowledged. And there's some pieces of that within the practices as well, within the book guidebook. Another one is these like little love rocks. So it's the idea that, and you can choose to make them from rocks or something else, but it's basically that you make, that the students make things that say you're loved on it. Like, they can decorate them however they want, but they say they're loved. You hide them about the school, about the playground. And when students find them, there's a note that accompanies it. And basically within the note, it tells them why they are loved for being a human being. And it encourages them to then do that for somebody else. So again, when you find those kinds of little, when you're imbuing the environment with cues of safety through deliberate actions like that, it feels good. It feels lighter. It feels warmer. It feels more friendly. And that's what I want to help. You know, I want to go beyond just kindness, but kindness matters too, right? So it's like, how do we do this in a way that is going to basically help us to reassure, edify that feedback loop of regulation?
Yeah, I really hear kind of all the things that you're talking about of it's, you're, you know, you're really just kind of creating this culture of connection and regulation and awareness of what's of your nervous system. And, you know, I think that what I've found kind of, you know, exploring and just kind of being in the classroom, that it's not so much about like, are you doing these individual activities? Does this activity work? Does this activity work better? But it's really more about the overall culture of safe, like emotional safety and connection that you're creating, that you can do in millions of different ways. In unlimited different ways. And I think that you're, you know, I've kind of, you know, I've been able to look through the regular classroom, the toolkit, and it sounds like there's a lot of ideas to really help you to start creating kind of this culture in your classroom. And I think that's beautiful. And I think that the cultures that we are in very much impact who we become and what develops within us. You know, if we have a culture of judgment where we're always, you know, even if we're not judging the person that, you know, we're talking to, but we're judging other people in front of them, or we have the culture where we're just constantly throwing out judgments, they're going to learn to judge others. Now, conversely, if we have this culture of curiosity, of seeing the best in children, of using language that expresses what's happening all internally, they're going to learn that too. So I think it's a really beautiful thing that you're doing with the regulated classroom. And even, you know, even talking to you has helped spark some ideas that I am excited to do tomorrow, just even a mesh of ideas.
So, I want you to, you got to communicate that with me at some point if you do, because I just want to hear about it. I want to see it. I want to like know, because I know that it really, when you do hold space for these quality of experiences, it does make a difference. As long as you do it with some frequency, right? You can't just do it like once a week or once every other, you know, month or something. But if you do it with some degree of frequency, it really makes a difference. And I love supporting that journey for people. And you're already way on that journey, Chaz, but it would be cool to see if you sprinkle in some of these ideas and just notice, especially because you so have your kids, like you could do anything with these, your students, you know? So yeah, just how it changes the quality of the experiences that you have with them and for them as well.
Yeah.
I just love it. And it's such an honor to talk with you because you so get it. Like you're two steps ahead of me understanding what it is that I'm describing and why it matters. And you're exactly right. It's all about how do we really cultivate this culture of felt safety? You know, how do we cultivate a culture where we really feel a sense of regulation and belonging and mutual beauty? Yeah, so needed.
Yeah. Well, I am so honored to be able to talk to you today. And I will definitely be using your resources more now that I've had this training with you.
Well, and I'll send you anything you need. And you, I know you should be part of my train the trainer stuff. You really should.
I mean, that toolkit with 64 sensory tools sounds pretty good to me. I'm just going to throw that out there in front of everyone and also hopefully encourage other people to get it too.
And if people are curious and stuff, I would love for them to reach out to us. We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook as Hear This Now, which is confusing, but or email us. You know, my website is regulatedclassroom.com. But our whole job is to support educators and to support educators bringing this work in this direction.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my